KCF WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. As the fighting rages on near Gaza City between Israel and Hamas, National Security Advisor John Kirby says no hostage deal is done yet. But
President Biden and the team here is doing everything we can to help get the hostages that Hamas took, get them released, including young children and, of course, Americans that are in that pool.
There were multiple blasts over northern Gaza earlier. The World Health Organization says 28 premature babies rescued from Gaza's El Shifa hospital have been flown to Cairo for specialized care. More from CBS's Imtiaz Taieb.
This situation, as we've been saying, is just abysmal. You see people lying on the floors, covered in blood with terrible wounds, and doctors just don't have the medicine they need. They can't sterilize injuries.
A Hawaii official says all 9 people aboard a U.S. Navy plane that overshot a runway and went into a bay have escaped injury. The base is about 10 miles from Honolulu. A divided federal appeals court based in St. Louis finds that private individuals and groups do not have the ability to sue under a key section of the Federal Voting Rights Act of 1965. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
A panel of judges says only the federal government can sue under a key part of the act. That would weaken the legislation in 7 states. But, says election law contributor David Becker,
the voting rights section of the Department of Justice, where I used to work, has about 20 or 25 attorneys. They can't look at everything that's happening in every single jurisdiction, from states to counties to local cities to school board races, all the time. It's a very difficult job.
He says it's likely the case eventually will make it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Elon Musk's ex-social media platform says the group Media Matters manufactured a report to show advertisers' posts alongside neo-Nazi and white nationalist posts in order to drive advertisers from the platform and destroy X Corporation. So X is suing the group. Meantime, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says he has opened an investigation into Media Matters for potential fraudulent activity. North Korea says it will attempt to launch its first military spy satellite as soon as Wednesday, reporter Alex Jensen from Seoul.
North Korea's given Japan a rocket launch window between November 22nd and December 1st. Aimed at countering threats from the U.S. and its allies, the plans provoked renewed concerns about the North breaking U.N. Security Council resolutions with possible tech support from Russia.
Stocks rise on Wall Street. The Dow closed up 204 points. The Nasdaq rose 159. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform. You need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
The simple act of sharing gratitude is how Thanksgiving is described in the dictionary. But did you know the first official national holiday happened in 1789? It was declared by President George Washington following the creation of the new U.S. Constitution. Today, Thanksgiving means gratefulness for the harvest, your family, or a higher power. Power. However you celebrate, all of us with your local Civic Media radio station wish you a wonderful holiday season. I'm Terry Barr.
Programs and child care. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hears arguments in a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative maps on Tuesday. Jeff Mandel of the liberal group Law Forward says the current Republican maps are unconstitutional because they're not contiguous.
They're not all made up of one uninterrupted chunk of land, and that is in conflict with the words of the Constitution, which requires the districts to be contiguous.
Mandel was on Upfront on WISN-TV. Lawyers for the map supporters are expected to argue that contiguous has different meanings. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Bucks are in the nation's capital. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks face the Wizards tonight in the Capital One Arena in Washington. Milwaukee coming off a 132-125 win over the Mavericks. Saturday night, Damian Lillard scored 27 points, Giannis with 40, and teammate Pat Connaughton connected on some three-point shots to add another 16 points despite the challenges.
Anything to win. You know, I think we got a team that is competitive. We've really grown in making sure that we're making the right basketball play.
NFL, what a day for the Packers. Packers. Three rookie defensive backs against the Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert. Jordan Love with a pair of beautiful touchdown passes. Green Bay beat L.A. 23-20 in a game that went down to the wire. Tense moments for Aaron Jones, who was carted off the field with a painful knee injury. I spoke to him at his locker.
No, it's not my ACL, so we're good there. To start the recovery process, the healing process, I got to do an MRI tomorrow, see how that goes, and go from there.
That's the Packers running back, Aaron Jones. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky tonight, maybe a few sprinkles or brief showers, lows in the mid-30s. And mostly cloudy for tomorrow, high in the low 40s and breezy. Wind gusts to 30 miles an hour. Sunshine in upper 40s on Wednesday. Much colder for Thanksgiving and next weekend. Currently 40 degrees.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I came across a really troubling story. And look, you know, we've seen a lot of these horrible, horrible stories coming out of prisons throughout the South, especially. I think it was Mississippi where you had the one guy that, big guy, he was like 230, 240 pounds, that they literally starved to death. Got him down to like 80, 90 pounds. I mean, it was just horrible. And, you know, we see this stuff, you know, too frequently. So I saw this story of an Alabama guard, corrections officer going, hey, you know, prisoners, I don't like that guy over there. He's causing a headache. Take him out and I'll protect you. Kind of frightening, scary stuff. That's why I've asked Michael Sonato to come share some thoughts on us. He's a labor reporter over at The Guardian US. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So walk me through this story. I mean, this again, we keep hearing this kind of stuff popping up where you've got these corrections officers, you've got these people doing some really vile, horrible stuff. This kind of fits into that vile and horrible.
Yeah, so to give like context of the state of Alabama's prisons, they're currently being sued by the Department of Justice. That case is scheduled to start next year because of how inhumane the conditions are. The accusations in that case are that they're violating the U.S. Constitution. They're very overcrowded. They're very understaffed. They're, you know, the deadliest prisons in the U.S. They've had record deaths in their prisons. You know, last year, it's on pace the same year. So it's just all around and just things not getting fixed. And instead, the state of Alabama is spending a ton of money defending the state in this case. And, you know, just, you know, about a decade ago, Alabama defunded their mental hospitals, and that kind of contributed to an influx into the prison system that's just not designed to handle it. They're very old buildings. They're not designed to hold as many people as they are. You know, I did a story earlier this year. You know, prisoner was posting videos on TikToks just depicting, showing prisoners with just debilitating healthcare issues that just were not getting treated, or they were just basically getting a Band-Aid and told to go away when, you know, it's just like really just harrowing, just things you would not, you know, one wouldn't expect to be allowed in this country. And that's just the kind of the modus operandi in Alabama's prison. So with this case, Robert Earl Council, you know, for people that don't know, last year in September and October, throughout in different prisons in Alabama, the prisoners went on strike. They stopped doing their prison jobs to demand that their conditions be improved, that, you know, the prisoners who need our required health care actually start to receive it. One of the organizers, one of the main organizers of that was Robert Earl Council. So, you know, I talked to him back then just about the state of the prisons. And, you know, recently, over the summer, he helped fellow prisoners file some lawsuits, particularly against the correctional officers. And one of the correctional officers that had encouraged other prisoners to take him out, you know, were listed in these lawsuits. You know, one testimony from another prisoner was that he was brought into disciplinary hearing. He accused that correctional officer of fabricating the whole thing, and his response was to punch him in the face and break his jaw. So that kind of behavior. There have been several COs that have been arrested in Alabama for, you know, just smuggling in drugs or, you know, committing crimes or, you know, using just the kind of disarray of the state of the prisons to their benefit. And in many cases that leads to harm. I mean, just today there was another story. A 22-year-old was supposed to get out of prison. He was in prison for a year. He wound up dead. It's in CNN, and that was at the behest of, you know, the correctional officers that contributed to that. And it's just like really just disgusting details. And it's just seems like they're just letting these prisons worsen in condition. Because, you know, they lose this trial at the end of next year, the federal government will take control of the Alabama prison system. And it seems like they're confined to the fact that they're at least not willing to put any sort of funding to, you know, clear out their prison system and to kind of provide the basic, you know, conditions that they're required to do.
Yeah, but you're going to have people, you know, Michael, who are going to say, you know, prison's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be a punishment, Michael. This isn't Club Med.
Well, there's a big difference from cruel and unusual punishment, which is against the, you know, violates the U.S. Constitution, which is what these prisons in Alabama,
like starving
are,
someone to death, would be cruel and unusual.
Absolutely. So, you know, you have to have people's basic needs met, and you know, the humanity. There's obviously a lot wrong with our incarceration system in the U.S. We're the world's prison capital. We have, you know, the highest prison rate. You know, it's just all across the metrics. You know, ridiculous. We're one of the only wealthy countries that still use the death penalty. Alabama still uses it. And, you know, it's you know, segregated for the conservative states that don't put, you know, the funding where these conditions are the worst are the ones that are, you know, still practicing that. You know, another issue is privatizing services and privatizing prisons. You know, private prisons have been.
Yeah, that's all over the country. You know, that's in every state. But let me ask you about the corrections officer, this Jeremy Pelzer, who, you know, evidently there is a federal lawsuit. It's going on. Are there any criminal charges against this guy? I mean, ultimately, if this is what he did, if this is he tried to get this guy murdered, shouldn't there be some kind of a crime? Shouldn't Jeremy be one of the folks that he's supposed to be protecting and keeping an eye on?
That's what, you know, that's part of what the lawsuit's trying to get, you know, and those things are up to prosecutors in Alabama to, you know, gather the evidence, listen to the evidence and, you know, file those charges. Right. And it takes a lot to get to that point.
Prosecutors because, in Alabama, you had me there going, okay, that's hopeless. Wow. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Michael Sonato. He's a labor reporter over at The Guardian. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at what he has put out. I got to get your thoughts on a couple other stories that have popped up. You know, here on the program, we've had some Amazon drivers on talking about trying to organize Amazon drivers and, you know, make that job better. I saw a video of Richard Sherman, NFL vice president and NFL Players Association vice president, kind of palling around with and having a high old time with some Amazon drivers. It made it actually look like a fun job, even though I know actual Amazon drivers who tell the stories of having to go to the bathroom in bottles because they got to keep their time going, who are constantly being harassed and pushed to do more and more. Didn't look like anything that Richard Sherman was seeing. Thoughts on the NFL Players Association's VP out there palling around with the union busting Amazon?
I would like to hear them try to explain it or at least respond to it, because you know, when I saw that, it was really surprising, because you know, I covered the Alabama Bessemer Amazon election, the first one, and the NFL Players Association endorsed that campaign. That election is still under review. It's not certified, it's not closed down. That, you know, the NLRB ordered a rerun of the election. The votes didn't turn out in the workers' favor, but there are still challenge votes that are determinative. There are still objections to the rerun election that have to be adjudicated by the board, and that's going to happen over the next year. So that election's still up in the air. That's not settled. The one in Albany is still not settled, and the Staten Island one, the NLRB regional director denied Amazon's objections to it, but they're still doing an appeal. So, there's over 200 unfair labor practices that have been opened or are settled. There are national settlements at Amazon. And then when you get to the drivers, there's a big disconnect, because Amazon will tell you they don't employ their drivers, but you know, they certainly didn't make this distinction when Richard Sherman was driving for them. They just not say, oh, he's not actually driving for Amazon. He's driving for this contractor that has nothing to do with us. But when it comes to these workers that unionized in Palmdale, California, that's the case. These workers unionized, they were fired in June, and since then they've been picketing and they've been holding walkouts so they'll get in touch with, you know, whatever Amazon facility around the country, and they'll, you know, participate in a walkout. So workers in that facility will walk out and join the drivers for Amazon with the Teamsters at pickets, and they've been over, you know, 20 different warehouses around the country. I think outside of Chicago is the most recent one just this week. So they're still putting pressure on Amazon to recognize that union, recognize the contract that they agreed upon with the contractors. And Amazon's defense is that they blaming it on the contractor, when it's like, okay, even if that was the case, let's say that, why would you fire these drivers? Why, if you're not against, if the workers have the right to unionize, they did, why would you not honor that? You know, I'm sure it's not the first time that these contractors have changed. So really, it's just up to them, and they're not, you know, explaining their decision, and they're not taking responsibility for the power they have to say, we're not dealing with this contractor anymore, but you are unionized, you've done the job for years. Many of these drivers have been working for Amazon for several years, and they've talked about the same conditions that I've heard and other reporters have reported on for years, the peeing in bottles, the getting rushed to do quotas, the heat issues, air conditioning in the vans not working, the low pay, which is, you know, for people, you know, comparing it to UPS, it's just, you're getting paid a fraction for, you know, this same amount of work, and you're delivering to, you know, 250 to, you know, upwards of 500 different places during this time of the year when peak season and the holidays are coming out. So it's it'll be interesting to see how that pans out, and how these different union elections and union organizing efforts that have been stymied by Amazon's opposition, how the labor board decides on these things, and how that impacts future organizing efforts at Amazon.
No, you're absolutely right. And one of the reasons, again, I keep coming back to, the reason I want Biden to be reelected in 24, because you change that, the composition of that National Labor Relations Board, all of this organizing gets much, much more difficult. Got to get your thoughts on the big three, the UAW members ratifying the contracts. It's a good thing, right?
It's a good thing, but that 60% and change ratification, that's not great. UPS, I think, was around 80%. So, I've seen explanations that it was due to the high expectations that workers had for this contract. So, it's much better than what they've gotten in previous contracts.
It's enormously than what they've gotten. I mean, it's not even close to what they've gotten in previous contracts recently. I mean, it is, someone sent me a copy of it. I'm going, this is much better than I thought they were going to get on the outset. When you say that expectations were high, how much higher do you think they were?
Well, from what I've seen from people that have explained their reasons for voting no, I think they were looking, for more in terms of the pay. I think the concessions that these workers have taken on in recent decades were just so big that it's, this contract doesn't make up for that.
No,
this contract is
right.
A good start to getting on the road to making up for that. Certainly, and it's certainly miles ahead of what we've seen from the United Auto Workers, and we've seen every other car company has been raising their wages to kind of stymie off any union organizing attempts from the UAW. That in recent years, the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, is a recent example. That was a close vote. But we'll see if they pick up things like that and are able to show this is what we want for our union workers. And
look, if they want the kind of wages, if they want the kind of increases that the expectations that you're talking about, you got to organize all the other companies as well. You got to have density in the industry to boost all wages in the industry. At least that's how I see it. But Michael, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Hope folks will check out your work, labor reporter over at The Guardian US. You can also check out his Substack page, thelaborreport.substack.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Michael Sonato, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, Rick.
As always, great stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Let's quick go to the phones. We got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing today?
Semi-coherent. So what I wanted to say was this. Do we expect anything else from the southern states in particular when it comes to the way they run their prisons and their jails?
No.
You know, if you look back, and we go back to the Civil War and right after the Civil War going into Reconstruction, they were renting out
convict lease programs,
And then, I mean, in the 60s, they called it the chain gangs and stuff. And this is going on down there for, you know, well over a century and a half, and probably longer.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, the fact of the matter is they used convict labor to break a lot of labor strikes, you know, especially in the coal mining industry. You know, Tennessee was front and foremost in that whole thing. Grundy County, as I remember, was the big place for a lot of this. And look, we're back to it. I mean, they're using prison labor to do all kinds of jobs. And, you know, this person that Michael Sonato wrote about was someone who said, hey, we don't have to put up with this. He filed a bunch of lawsuits, organized strike. And you know, for his trouble, you know, you get a prison guard who wants to off him. I want to know why the guy's not, you know, at least in jail or heading towards jail while this is just a civil lawsuit.
Because I guess I want to say that the red counties, and I'm including mine, which is up north,
yeah,
it's that good old boy network where, you know, if you're in the same political system and you have the same political beliefs, then nothing happens. I mean, the district attorney or whatever or whatnot doesn't do anything. And I've seen it happen here in my own little rural county here in Pennsylvania. So it's just surprising to me. Well, I guess it's not. Let's just say it's so hypocritical that the same people that are screaming about, you know, crime and criminals and following the Constitution and being law-abiding are the same ones that's not following any of it. But I guess, what do you expect? Yeah. Have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I mean, you know, the reality is, you know, and again, I'm glad she brought up the convict lease programs. You know, we have for a very long time incarcerated people and use them as cheap labor. And I look at, it's no state's immune. You know, I remember while the wildfires were going on out in California, you know, a couple of the, you know, the outposts that were manned by prisoners paid like, you know, like 50 cents an hour to do dangerous, you know, life-threatening firefighting work. You know, didn't get as much attention as you would think it should. But we do this in this country. We have a for-profit prison industry that, you know, they got to figure out how to squeeze every nickel, squeeze every penny out of someone's misery. And isn't that, you know, a lot of what we see happen in corporate America? Let's figure out how we can abuse, you know, people's misery, and then of course profit from it. Sad. And look, and you hear these stories, and the sad thing is Alice is right. You know, in a lot of these places, it's just, eh, you go along, get along. You know, it happens. Yeah, he's a bad guy. Yeah, it's a prison. Prisons are supposed to be dangerous places. It's because they're criminals, after all. I just, you know, I can't get the image of the guy. Actually, I think it was Arkansas now that I'm thinking about it. It was Arkansas. The guy was 230 pounds when he went to jail. And when he died, they weighed him at like 80 pounds. They literally starved him to death in solitary confinement. And we now know that solitary you know, putting anyone in solitary confinement is horrible for their mental health. And then add on top of that that they probably had mental problems to begin with. You're only magnifying that. You know, our prison systems are supposed to be about rehabilitation, not retribution. And yet, retribution seems to be all that we can think about. And look, you know, we put more people in prison for, you know, really dumb stuff. Look, violent criminals, rapists, murderers, absolutely. You lock them up. But a lot of these low-level drug crimes, a lot of the, I don't know. But again, if you look at the for-profit prison contracts, 85% occupancy demands. You think any hotel in this country would love to have a contract that says 85% of heads in beds?
93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. National Security Advisor John Kirby says of a deal being negotiated with Hamas to release more hostages,
we believe we're closer than we've ever been, so we're hopeful.
A three-judge appeals panel in St. Louis rules that the Justice Department can bring under the 1965 Voting Rights Act lawsuits challenging discriminatory voter suppression efforts. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
The court here is saying that the statute refers to the government and not private groups. The Justice Department was not involved in this case procedurally, so the appellate court ruled that without the federal government's participation, there is no remedy under the Voting Rights Act.
Nearly 5 million people are predicted to fly over Thanksgiving, a 7% increase from last year, U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
We want everyone to be prepared for changes due to weather, and travelers should be checking with their airline directly for the most up-to-date information about their flights, including any delays or cancellations.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The athletic director at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville has died. The university did not provide details Monday, only that Christina Navarro-Krupka was pregnant and her death was unexpected. Navarro-Krupka grew up in Madison and was in her fourth year as director of athletics and assistant chancellor at Platteville. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hears arguments in a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative maps on Tuesday. Luke Berg is with the Conservative Institute for Law and Liberty. He says there's an easy fix to claims that non-contiguous districts are unconstitutional.
If you were simply to take the islands and put them in the districts that surround them, it would eliminate the contiguity problem and you wouldn't have any population problems in the existing map.
Berg was on Upfront on WISN-TV. The map's challengers will argue that the way the maps were drawn was unconstitutional. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Maybe we'll have a cookie trade.
I like that idea. I like that a lot.
We'll eat them while we're on the show.
Because everyone loves listening to people on the radio eat.
Calvin, what's your favorite cookie?
Shout out to my mom's. She makes these sour cream cookies around Christmas time, and they're really good.
My mouth just watered.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Weather brought to you by Bug Tussle. Bug Tussle. We're out there because you're out there.
Bug Tussle. We're out there.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky tonight, maybe a few sprinkles or brief showers, lows in the mid-30s. And mostly cloudy for tomorrow, high in the low 40s and breezy. Wind gusts to 30 miles an hour. Sunshine in upper 40s on Wednesday. Much colder for Thanksgiving and next weekend. It's 39 right now.
Looking for a reliable, fast, and unlimited internet provider? Look no further than Bug Tussle. Whether you're streaming, gaming, working, or learning, Bug Tussle has you covered. Bug Tussle has continued to serve the rural communities of Wisconsin for over 20 years by providing the most reliable, high-speed internet and excellent local customer service. Call 877-227-0924 or visit bugtussle.com to get started. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Tell a friend what's on tap.
There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Future.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Maria Bartiromo. I remember the first time I heard her name. Joey Ramone had done a song about her on his final album, you know, right as he was dying of leukemia. He sang about her because she was like the business reporter. So she would give all the financial news. Now she's turned into kind of, crazy. floated the idea today that the Chinese released the COVID virus on purpose. Just saying, is it possible? It's possible that they deliberately COVIDed the world just to get rid of Donald Trump. That's the theory. That is now coming out of Fox Business. And remember when Fox Business talked about business? Remember that? No, but this is where we're going. Get ready for it. We're going to get a lot of January 6th. We're going to get a lot of COVID. We're going to get a lot of crazy between now and election because, as I said earlier, Republicans don't have an agenda. They have no policy aims. They have no way of making your lives better. It's just about the outrage. And here to share some thoughts on, well, maybe Maria Bartiromo is on to something. Maybe it's possible. That's why I've asked my good friend Bob Ney to come share some thoughts with us. Bob's a former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you think? Is it possible the Chinese did it on purpose just to get Donald Trump, you know, as retribution against the tariffs?
I don't think so. Now, I do think the Chinese wanted rid of him. I mean, no doubt in my mind, because Trump, you know, the one thing that we've talked about that, you know, he definitely needs to be recognized for is that he took the Chinese to task, which nobody in modern times has done. And of course, Biden's kept the tariffs, which, yep, you know, has been a good leverage point. But I don't think China did the virus to get him. I do believe that China worked on the virus in the lab, knew of the virus, et cetera. And that I think when they were to dispose of the animals, I think somebody got them out and sold them on the wet market. I mean, that's kind of as close as I get to conspiracy theories. But
no, that's where my mind has always been.
Yeah,
because, you know, at the end of it, when they released it, they actually got it much worse than we have. They've actually suffered much more from it than we have.
And it's like anything. They're doing lab experiments. There's no doubt. You know, they tried to, you know, eventually keep it quiet. They didn't think it was, you know, they thought they could contain it. But I think, and I've had friends that have had this theory, not crazy friends, but DC friends. But I think that they were to dispose of animals that they tested and that they worked on and experimented on. And look, you know, some Chinese worker making 15 cents an hour was, you know, told, hey, bring these to the wet market. They're worth a lot of money. And, you know, a couple of them went out. So, but I don't think they did it to intentionally inflict it on their own population because they've had trouble since this. And they didn't do it to get rid of Donald Trump. I don't think they wanted Donald Trump, but I think that's too sophisticated.
Yeah, well, it is that, but it's also
their own people.
It is a bit extreme. We're going to cause a global pandemic. Now, again, you go, well, how did they know that they were going to cause a global pandemic? They obviously didn't. But by releasing it into their own backyard,
right,
I don't know. I can see if it just hit us. I could see that if they put it in the baby formula, like the melamine, or, you know, the dog food, like the melamine that was killing, you know, dogs and kids. You know, maybe I could see that.
Lead paint on toys. They did that. Yeah.
Maybe.
Right.
Yeah. But here's what I've been saying for a while. It's the outrage candy. And the outrage is we got to relitigate COVID. And now you got Mike Lee going back after some crazy stuff. I guess Ray Epps is now popular again. We're going to relitigate January 6th. You got Marjorie Trainwreck Greene calling for a new select committee of people who are going to this time, you know, tell the truth. Any thoughts?
Well, you know, the video that's being released is, well, first of all, we've had enough. You know, January 6th had a committee. Having another January 6th committee is not going to verify or codify that these were just tourists, you know, wanting to just see the Capitol. And then I saw some of the footage where somebody was trying to climb up the wall, tear gas came in, and the guy, his face was cut, and he's like, look what they've done to us. I was just standing out here. Yeah, out where you're not supposed to be with a crowd of, you know, thousands of people, and you weren't supposed to be up near the Capitol like that. But releasing this footage now, pieces are going to be taken. I'll tell you another thing, too. They keep showing this footage of these guys with the, you know, Trump flags walking very calmly right past the door, and I know that door well, in the Senate. And what also happened was some people were in the Capitol. Police were up the rotunda. They didn't know who had automatic weapons or not. These people didn't go through screeners. They went through breaking glass windows. And nobody was about to start a firefight in a rotunda.
Yeah.
So if they had a scene perception here because of the video that it looked calm, the officers were trying to remain calm so that they basically wouldn't be killed.
Yeah. It's called de-escalating a situation. Something a lot of policemen should learn from.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what happened in the Capitol. And now they're taking, although I must say, I don't disagree with Johnson, the Speaker Johnson, releasing the material, because look, McCarthy released the material to one guy.
Yeah.
Why? Because he knew what Tucker Carlson would do with it.
He knew how he'd spin it. Right.
Yeah, which was outrageous. So if you're going to release it to one, release it to everybody. That part I don't quibble with.
No.
But people are going to take pieces of this thing, and there is nothing to investigate. It's done. The police were not, taking people on tours. So, Marjorie, she just needs to, find something else to...
Maybe they should have participated in the first select committee, and then maybe we would have gotten both sides. We would have gotten the pro, the con, the in, the out, the back, the forth. Maybe we would have gotten an actual defense from them. Yeah. Maybe. But the problem is they didn't want any part of that.
Well, and there is no defense, because these were people who broke into the Capitol, and if somebody broke through a door or broke through a window and you followed them, you're culpable. You break into the front door of the post office and I follow you in. I go, I was just following Rick after he broke the door down. No, I'm culpable for it. And I'll tell you this, if this had been the White House, and I'll just throw this out here, and these people were coming over the fence, what does anybody think would have happened?
Yeah, they'd have gunned them down.
They'd have gunned them down.
Yep.
Exactly.
No question
exactly.
about it.
Without a doubt.
You know, as I was, you were just talking here. I was remembering Elizabeth from Knoxville. Do you remember the meme that was going on about her?
No.
She was this woman who evidently she was in the Capitol. She had claimed she had been tear gassed. She was crying and her eyes were all in. And they what'd you do? Who are you? I'm Elizabeth from Knoxville, Tennessee. And they just tear gassed me. And they go, what'd you do? We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution. And I'm going, this was the mindset of the people who were there that day.
Right. And then the other thing is about, the woman who was shot. Those doors, if you go through those doors, she was trying to get through. And again, they don't know if they're armed, they've got weapons, they don't know. And if you go through those doors, you are literally 2.5 feet away from the door where you go in, where the speaker and the members are. Literally that close.
I've watched that video a couple of times. And what's surprising to me is that, for all this talk of, we care about her, nobody in that crowd went to help her.
No.
Nobody in that crowd went to her side. It was the Capitol Police. It looked like a Secret Service person. It looked like someone in a suit, with an earpiece. It looked like someone who worked there. They immediately went to her aid.
Well, and here's the thing. Getting in the Capitol is one thing. Going through the rotunda in the building is another. When you go through that door where she was shot, and I've been through that door thousands of times, when you go through that door, you go 2 feet, you're on the floor of the House. The members were up in the gallery hiding. I don't know if the vice president was on the floor at the time, but members were, and that's where the speaker's rostrum is. Yeah, you're going to get shot.
Yeah.
Yes, you are. Because now it's one thing down, in the rotunda doing these things. It's another when you're about to go onto the floor of the House. And who knew if she had an automatic weapon or not? No one knew. You know, no. Best way to not get shot trying to breach the floor of the house is don't breach the floor of the house.
There's the answer. And the thing is, I keep coming back to the very simple truth. What was the rally about? What was the theme of the rally? Stop the certification of the election.
And the vice president can do it, and he's down there in the Capitol.
Yep. Everybody went there with the intention of we're going to stop the certification of that election. Now, a good number of them were not going to go into the Capitol. They weren't going to commit crimes. But the ones who did, they're the ones who should be held accountable. And some of them have been.
Let me ask this, too. Let's say, you know, let's rewind history and create it ourselves with the hypothetical that they breached the floor, got a hold of Pence, and hung him. Then what would the charges be on everybody that said, Pence is down there at the Capitol?
Yeah, he's hanging.
Yeah, he can stop it. He's down there. Then what's the charges?
Well, yep. maybe Trump, maybe the Speaker of the House does do, well, no, the Speaker would have been Nancy Pelosi. She wouldn't have caved. But who knows? Maybe they'd have hung her.
I'm just saying that, you know, then there's a conspiracy of murder.
Wow. Yeah.
Culpability.
I don't want to go there because, you know, we were very close to that, weren't we?
Right. Well, the one guy had the ties, you know, the wrist ties.
Yeah.
What were they going to do with that?
Yeah, you get those zip ties on. They were going to
They were going to zip tie some books for the Congress, you know, to keep them together.
They're going to zip tie their pants together so they don't defecate on the floor.
Wow.
I mean, that's out of all of the things, and this is, I guess it just shows where my mind goes. Out of all of the things that went on that day, someone defecating on the floor of the Capitol, how does that come to mind? How do you go, you know what? I think I'm going to drop trout right here in the middle of the hallway and bang, I'm going to leave a present.
Yeah.
And then I think about the poor guy who had to go and clean that mess up.
Right. Exactly.
I don't know. It's just, right. You know, but these are the very best people.
But they're just
tourists.
They're just tourists. That's all.
I got to tell you, as a tourist, I've never taken a dump in the middle of the room.
Exactly.
We're going to change topics. I got to change topics. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Got to get your thoughts on the Eighth Circuit's evidently their decision to basically gut the Voting Rights Act. Evidently, the claim, as I understand this, is that private citizens and civil rights groups and individuals can't sue under this, only the federal government can. Is that how this goes?
Yeah, they had a 2-1 decision, and it was the Eighth Circuit, which is the Court of Appeals, and they actually acted on a lower court ruling. So it went from the lower court to the Court of Appeals that private citizens and also advocacy groups, which would include the NAACP, for example, and other groups, that those groups would be precluded from bringing lawsuits under a provision that in itself stops discrimination in state and local election laws. So basically the appeals court decision would limit and could and probably would limit the enforcement of the Voting Rights Act is what would happen. And because the appeals court is saying that the big key part of this act can only be enforced by the attorney general themselves, all right? And then that goes back to some kind of, I don't pretend to understand all of this, but some decision a year ago, and that dismissed Arkansas's district map because they said the Justice Department has to join the plaintiffs if you want a decision. So, bottom line of that whole thing I went through was that you'd have to have justice directly intervene in order for any of these to be questioned, is the way I read it. So groups wouldn't have no power, NAACP individuals would have no power to enforce in the sense of filing motions on the Voting Rights Act.
And as I understand, you've got Gorsuch and Thomas who have supported this idea. So the question is are there three more on the court, on the Supreme Court, that would go along with this? And for me, I look at this not as, you know, as a racial issue. I go, look at it, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. You know, what do you do if you've been denied the right to vote? If this is the case, and there are ways to preclude people from voting, what remedy do people have? Because at some point, you know, they keep telling us, the majority is going to be the minority. So these kind of things you might want to keep around. At least that's where my thinking goes.
Right. And if you look at the decisions, the judges even noted this. In 40 years, there have been over 180 successful cases that have been filed, and 15 were just filed only by the Attorney General. So I guess what I'm reading from that, the rest of the cases couldn't have been filed if this decision was out there. Jeez. This is eliminating individual people's right, basically. Yep. To sue under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And that runs contrary to anything that we've had in our existing law for 40 years or anything when it comes to fair actions where a group or an individual can make a motion. Now, just because they make a motion doesn't mean that that's it. You know, it has to be decided, of course. But the way this is going to read, the AG themselves will only have the jurisdiction to do that. You know?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where our Supreme Court comes down on this.
Because it's going to affect, eight or nine states only in their jurisdiction. So it's going to have to kick up to the Supreme Court.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where the Roberts Court takes us.
Right.
Finally, I got to get your thoughts on the passing of Rosalynn Carter. Carter. I got to tell you, I woke up today expecting to hear that President Carter had passed. Because, when you're together that long, the stories that I've read over the years of, couples who are that close for that long, it isn't long. So, for me, sadly, every day now I'm going to be watching for that. But any thoughts on the former First Lady?
Right. And I thought the same thing. And my parents were married 76 years, and then my mother passed and my father passed, And when you're together that long, there's, a lot of influence on the heart. But even Donald Trump wrote a beautiful piece on Rosalynn Carter, or somebody wrote it for him. But the fact he released something nice on her. And I've had a fortunate opportunity to meet her and Jimmy Carter. And then Jimmy Carter set up the Ford Carter Commission, which led to us, Steny Hoyer and I and Chris Dodd and McConnell, being able to do the Help America Vote Act. The Carters are just wonderful people. Anybody would have, I think, a political disagreement with Carter over the whole Iran issue, et cetera, foreign policy. I think even if they have that disagreement, they have to appreciate the Carters as human beings. They're just amazing, for real people. I was fortunate enough to meet both of them. And they're just two of the most genuine people, kind, you can meet. I met them under the auspices of Habitat for Humanity. She did a lot of mental health work as First Lady when he was governor and as First Lady for the country. Genuine people, great people, and a lot of good thoughts are going to go her way and also towards Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, no, I, it's sad to see, and the lives that they led,
amazing.
Just amazing. But I appreciate the thoughts, Bob. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me at rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around.
I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1816. That was the day the Albany Typographical Society used the term scab to describe a strikebreaker. The word scab had been used in England for nearly three centuries as a slang, meaning a rascal or scoundrel. By the late 1700s, laborers began to use the insult to refer to workmen who wouldn't join a union or a strike. In the United States, the early 1800s were a time of organization among skilled workers, especially in cities in the Northeast. Cordwainers, or shoemakers, were one early group of organized craftsmen. Cordwainers who chose not to join the workers' associations were viewed with contempt as scabs. A Philadelphia cordwainer during a court trial in 1806 defined a scab as a shelter for lice. The Albany Typographical Society is largely credited for being the first organization to use the term scab in print to define a strikebreaker. Company owners have long tried to replace striking workers with scabs. In 1886, scabs replaced striking workers at the McCormick Reaper Works in Chicago. Police fired on the anti-scab demonstration outside the plant, which led to the Haymarket tragedy. The National Labor Relations Act, passed in 1935, attempted to make such strikebreaking illegal, but a 1938 Supreme Court decision created an opening for bringing in scab replacement workers. Perhaps the best definition of a scab is thought to come from the popular author Jack London, who wrote, "After God had finished the rattlesnake, the toad, the vampire, he had some awful substance left, with which he made the scab. Judas Iscariot was a gentleman compared to a scab. For betraying his master, he had character enough to hang himself. A scab has not." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, here's a shocker. You know the Moms for Liberty group, you know, or as I call them, Maniacs for Misery? Evidently, a pastor and leader of the Philadelphia Moms for Liberty group, evidently he has been exposed as a registered sex offender. Are you surprised? That was my first response. I saw the story. I'm going, am I surprised by any of this? And the answer is no. Evidently, Philip Fisher Jr., a pastor and faith-based outreach leader for the group's local chapter, was convicted in 2012 for aggravated sexual abuse of a 14-year-old child. Evidently, he was 25 and living in Chicago at the time, and now he is a pastor in Philadelphia. Huh. Now, what's interesting is, you know, you go back and you look at the Maniacs for Misery and some of the things that they've been advocating for, you know, kind of makes you go, he's the kind of person you should be keeping children away from. And yet somehow, he's right there in your ranks, you know, out there banning those books because, hey, you know, we want to keep kids stupid. We want to keep kids vulnerable. You surprised by it? The answer is no. None of this is ever all that surprising. And for me, I look at what's going on, especially with these kind of groups and the people that they attract. It's not about what's best for the kids. It's not about what's best for their education, for the future of the country. It's about none of those things. It's about their power and their control. It's about their ego. It's about what they get out of it. And I've met people over the years who participate in these groups, and it really becomes, so it's about them. It's not about the issue. They could care less about the kids. And certainly could care less about education. And I would argue a lot of them are on the privatization bandwagon or on someone's payroll. And for me, that's where a lot of this stuff kind of breaks down for me. When I look at these folks who are advocating for a particular position, it always seems to come back to, we need to break down public education. We need to privatize it. Give it back to religion. You know, pastors. Maybe not the sex abuser kind of pastors. but there does seem to be a lot of them. Just saying. Just kind of throwing that out there. As someone who went to Catholic school. Yeah, there I said it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Subscribe as we are ticking down our final days live radio. We will be continuing doing an hour daily program on many of our affiliate stations, but those will be in the recorded format. But the podcast is always available, always there for you. Never miss a moment. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick.
You are listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W228 EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.